live.
Hello and welcome back to another opaque episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Romano Da Silva.
This is Walter Vinci.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you'd like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. And stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback...
Love feedback.
Well, there was plenty of feedback when a certain actor was cast for a certain movie to play a certain superhero.
And everybody lost him. Everybody... You cast one guy as Batman, and everybody lost their minds!
As you probably realize, the internet nearly imploded on itself when Ben Affleck was cast to play Batman in the Man of Steel follow-up Batman vs. Superman. And Wally, as usual, I turn to you, being the resident comic book nerd among us. Your thoughts?
I am of the vault. Like, stop losing your shit. All right, relax. You guys were all up in arms about Heath Ledger being the Joker. Oh, it's the end of the Batman franchise. Oh, this is gonna be the stupidest thing ever. What'd you get? Best Joker. Okay, so shut the fuck up. Wait for the movie to come out.
Yeah, it is funny because also back in the day when Michael Keaton was cast, there were tons of legends.
Oh, no!
And
what have you done? That's not Batman!
Well, here's my... Hermano?
No, I'm pretty much in the same boat as Wally. I was one of those assholes that when Heath Ledger was cast, I immediately went, like, what the hell? Like, I'd only ever seen him in those, like, teeny bopper movies, and I just wasn't sure about it until I saw the first image of him as Joker, and then I'm like, all right, I like the way it looks, but, you know, it doesn't really say anything about the quality of the movie. Then I saw the movie, and it's my favorite, you know, Batman movie, so I'm going to reserve, like,
exactly.
I'm going to wait and see
wait
the movie.
Wait for the product.
I mean, yeah, wait till the first trailer at very least.
Does he not have Oscars under his belt already?
Well, that's the thing. You know, yes, he has a writing and a direct, well, a producing Oscar. So now I agree that it's tough when people react so vehemently towards these type of castings, and it's not understandable to me when it is somebody who is much lesser known. You know, Heath Ledger didn't have that much and wasn't that well known back when he was cast. Michael Keaton, whose biggest roles at that time were, like, Gung Ho and...
Mr. Mom,
yeah.
Comedies.
Right. And he really didn't have many dramatic roles under his belt. Yeah. And other actors throughout, you know, they just didn't have that body of work.
Yeah.
Now, Ben Affleck has a body of work. And granted, his acting style has gotten better over the years. Early on in his career, not a good actor at all. Much more recently, he's steadily improved his acting style. His most impressive, obviously, behind the camera. But I think some people may have somewhat of a point, because personally, I don't think his acting style serves the role itself, especially as Bruce Wayne. I think you can get away with wearing a mask and, you know, being, you know, the Batman, but it's just, I don't see his acting style fitting the role of Bruce Wayne.
I think he can do it, because I think you have to be Bruce Wayne. I always thought you have to be Bruce Wayne first. If you can look like Bruce Wayne, then I think you can be Batman. Like, George Clooney looks like George Clooney, and that was a terrible choice for...
Well, once again, somebody who's early on in his career, and...
But
George
Clooney doesn't look like Bruce Wayne on his best day. Val Kilmer doesn't look like Bruce Wayne on his best day. And those movies suck. You know, I could see Michael Keaton looking like Bruce Wayne. I can see Christian Bale looking like Bruce Wayne. And I can totally see Ben Affleck looking like Bruce Wayne. Put a mask on him.
It depends, too.
Well, he's not Bruce Wayne when he has a mask on, though.
He's always Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
It also depends on the version of Bruce Wayne we're going to get. Are we going to get the suave, playboy, you know, billionaire Bruce Wayne? Or are we going to get this dark version of Batman, like the guy who's seen some shit and, you know, is a darker, brooding Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
I think he could probably play that better than the suave, rich boy Bruce Wayne.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, I think it'd go better the other way around.
Yeah.
I think it'd be better the
suave guy?
Yes, absolutely. Bruce Wayne.
Oh, yeah. One role, he's played a good, suave, like, playboy
the Town.
Guy. Yeah. No.
He was very suave in The Town.
I don't think he was suave. I think that was a kind of gritty, South Boston character.
But when he was interacting with Rebecca Hall's character, when he was trying to win her over, he was very suave.
I don't think he's going to... I don't think Dark would be the way to go with. But, I mean, they're talking about it being the Batman Superman thing. Now, a lot of people are jumping the gun and going, it's the Dark Knight Returns. It might not be. It might just be Batman versus Superman. You know, you might see Batman seeing this now alien threat come to Earth, not too far from Gotham City. He's going to go investigate. He's going to want to know what the hell's up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I'll reserve final judgment until I see the final product. That's my initial reaction, is that his acting style doesn't suit the role. And I'm also trying to figure out maybe why he would accept this. And my only reasoning can be is that Warner Brothers is going to give him carte blanche to do whatever the hell he wants behind the camera in the future. You know, that's what he is for us.
You can do this. You can do this for yourself.
Right. Yeah. He has stated, you know, he wants to direct. You know, he just wants to direct, and he's also said he wants to act in the movies that he directs. You know, which is something I would not prefer, but you know, nevertheless, I would still rather him do his own projects than sign on to a role like this. You know, but if the result is that we get more good product from him. All of his last three movies.
Yeah, sure. I think the other thing that poor Ben Affleck stands for. I love the dude. I got nothing but love for the Affleck. Is that I saw this video recently about resting bitch face. He might just suffer from resting douche. People just see Ben Affleck and go, oh, that guy's a dick. That guy's a like what a douche.
That's what I
say. And like, they don't know him. Like, you don't know.
That's what I say when I see Cameron Diaz.
Exactly. he might be the coolest dude in the world. Like, if you ran into him, and be like, hey. Ben Affleck's pretty freaking cool, but I think he's got that look about him that people just turns people off.
That's funny.
Unless you're Jennifer Garner.
Anything else you guys want to mention about this?
Well, I'm just going to reserve judgment. I'm not going to jump the gun like I did last time.
Just wait. It'll be fine. You'll see.
All right, in this episode, we'll be talking about Jeff Nichols' latest film, Mud. But before we get into that, it is time for a yay or nay.
Yay!
This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I will let Walter go first.
All right, well, I've got a surprise for all you people, because I haven't had a chance to see much of anything lately. But I was flipping through the on-demand portion of cable and ended up stumbling into the Cinemax After Dark section.
Oh, Jesus.
Where I saw a title that I just could not help but watch, and it's called Erotic Bigfoot. I saw this and went... have to watch, and I watched it with one of our listeners, which makes it even funnier. This movie is an absolute riot. It is. I'm sitting there watching this going, wow, people wank to this? Like, this is what passes? So the entire time we're watching this movie, we're like, this is specifically made for, like, 7th grade boys. It's just, for like, something that's supposed to be, like porn, it's bad. It's just so bad.
So are you sure it's just called Erotic Bigfoot? Because my results show Sweet Prudence and the Erotic Adventures of Bigfoot.
That is the full title of the movie. And it come for the boobies, stay for Bigfoot jerking off in the bush.
What the fuck?
And later on, a Bigfoot human sex scene, which is so poorly shot that the whole thing is just bad. It's just an exercise in just terrible movement. But somebody, somewhere... got paid to make this.
Is this...
Somebody greenlit this at the studio somewhere. Think about that for a second.
A sex... okay, here's... IMDb actually has a synopsis. Sex comedy about a group of people who are sexual adventurers and decide to spend their summer in a resort by the lake, of course. But soon they realize they are not alone and the infamous cryptid with big feet... makes his presence known.
Okay, just some key points I'm going to put in this. Well, there's an opening scene where these two girls are, like, in the water, and they're supposed to be, like, this lake, and the water is supposed to be deep, but you can tell the minute the girl tries to go swimming out, the water's only probably, like, 8 inches deep. So they're trying to, like, make it look like it's, like, deep by, like, kind of, like, crunching down, like, ah, let's make out! So that's already hilarious. And then, there's the whole Bigfoot beating up in the bush, and that's also funny. The backstory. She's like, oh, I'm trying to get my cryptozoology degree, but something happened. We went to Scotland. Then it cuts to Scotland. Says like Scotland. No, seriously, would we lie? Like in like subtitles. So you have these two dudes who are like out to photograph the Loch Ness monster, and then in comes the chick wearing like this kilt, like the sexy kilt girl, like Halloween outfit. So they're waiting. This terribly CGI'd like Loch Ness monster shows up, but she's busy vibrating with a dildo that she hid in a thermos.
Why are we spending any more time?
Because this is hilarious. And then when she has an orgasm, it scares the Loch Ness monster away. And so now she has to overcome the fact that her professor said she'll never get her cryptozoology degree unless she comes up with some proof. And proof they get. And this... somebody got paid to make this!
The person who got paid is William Burke, who's producer and director. And
somebody wrote it!
And he's a Skinamax guy. He's done... Forbidden Science TV series, Sin City Diaries TV series, Lingerie TV series. I mean, this is a Skinamax man.
It is hilarious.
Jesus. Yeah.
I'm not even giving it a yay on it because it's not even worthy of either. It is just one of the strangest things I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go next. My yay or nay is a bit of a theme. First one I'll talk about is from 2000, Barking Dogs Never Bite. This is a movie directed by Bong Joon-ho, who has directed a couple of movies that I've really liked. The Host, which I know Hermano doesn't like very much, but I really enjoyed that. That's the one from 2006, not the one this year, people. And a movie from 2009, Mother, which is amazing. Probably,
I love that movie.
That movie would have been in my top five easily of that year. This one, Barking Dogs Never Bite, is a rather strange movie. Have you seen this?
No.
An idle part-time college lecturer is annoyed by the yapping sound of a nearby dog. He decides to take drastic action. And it's a Korean film, and Doona Bai is in this as well. She plays a neighbor, somebody else who lives in this apartment complex with this guy. And it's just a strange, strange story of this. And it's not just this one dog he takes action upon. It's more than one dog that he does certain things to. And
it's a Korean vintage movie with dogs?
Kind of. But it also, I don't know really what it's about. Like, it really doesn't go anywhere with any of its themes or anything like that. It has characters that fall in and out of the story, which I guess is kind of the point, but... the overall themes of the movie, I really didn't get. It's supposed to be a comedy. It turns rather sad by the end. There's some really cool shots in it, though. I mean, it's just kind of an odd movie. So I think I would give it a meh. Next, staying on the foreign theme, from 2002, the first in a series of his Vengeance trilogy by Park Chan-wook. That would be Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance.
What did you think?
Structured very strangely, especially in the beginning. Now, I'm trying to remember. It's been about a week since I saw this. Sympathy for Mr. A recently laid off factory worker kidnaps his former boss's daughter, hoping to use the ransom money to pay for his sister's kidney transplant. That's right, this guy is actually deaf. As well. Both of you seen this?
Seen it.
Yeah. And the second half is much better than the first half. It really gains momentum in the second half. Because it spirals out of control halfway through. Halfway through this movie, things just start going insane.
Does it ever?
And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And it's so interesting because he introduces... Talking about random characters, he introduces random characters in here that are, like, so unique that you would never think of. Like, halfway through the movie, I'm not going to spoil what happens, but there is an ancillary character off to the side that finds his way in it that he is obviously disabled. He has some sort of, muscular dystrophy or something like that. And he obviously turns up later on in the film, but it's just such an odd moment that how he shows up. It's like so weird, and you're like, what is going on here, you know? But it's like only Park Chan-wook could introduce this type, because in any other movie, any lesser movie, it would be like just a random guy, a random happenstance passerby, you know? But he introduces his character as disabled, and it adds a bit of, you know, a really interesting texture to the film. And from there on, you know, it's this, it's actually like two people seeking vengeance at the same time. And it's interesting. I mean, I dug, like I said, it takes a little while to get into, but I think overall it's probably a mild yay. It's a good introduction, I think, into this Vengeance trilogy. You're not too crazy about Wally?
I don't like this movie at all. That ancillary character ruined that movie for me.
Really?
Yep. The minute that thing showed up and gets involved in the storyline the way it does, it turned me completely off.
Why?
This movie. Because it's completely out of left field. It's the character just walks back and forth in the background, and then later on becomes an important part of the story. No, I can't stand that.
Hmm. That's interesting. What about you, Hermano?
I honestly don't even remember what you guys are talking about. It's been like wicked long time.
I'll tell you off air.
Okay. Yeah, it's been a long, long time.
So since I had already seen Old Boy a couple of years ago, which is the second film in his Vengeance trilogy, and I know we're going to be revisiting it later on this year, I went ahead and watched Lady Vengeance, the finale to this trilogy. Once again, directed by Park Chan-wook, and another movie that takes a little bit of time to get into, but once it gets about halfway through, it is balls out insane. Now, this movie is probably structured even much more weakly than the previous one I talked about, because it goes back and forth so much in time that it's really hard to keep up with. And it may be a cultural thing, you know, with the translation issues and stuff like that, and trying to keep up with the subtitles, which I typically don't have a hard time with, but it's just structured in such an odd way that you really have a hard time keeping up with at what point in time you're viewing. And also what she was really done to her to be wronged. Though the plot is after 13 and a half years in prison for kidnapping and murdering a boy, a woman is released and tries to fix her life. She finds a job in a bakery. She orders the manufacturing of a special weapon. She reunites with her daughter, who is adopted by an Australian family. And she plots a revenge against the real killer. And with the support of former inmates from prison. So, yeah, she's in... There's points in this film where she's introducing herself or reintroducing herself to people that then they flash back to the moment that they had met in prison or the key moments that involved them in prison. So, it doesn't pay off until, you know, in the second half when she finds the person she's looking for, and then she finds the families that were wronged, and that the ideas of vengeance and what it does to the human psyche and the soul is really wonderful in the second half. It's really well done. But it's another one I probably have to give a mild yay to because of the way it's structured. The second half is awesome, I think. The ending is a little anticlimactic, not as rewarding as I think you would like it with her personal story. I can see why people like it. Obviously, you know, like I said, it's been a couple of years since I've seen Old Boy. I think that's the best one of the three.
If it weren't for I Saw the Devil, Chan-wook Park would have completely turned. I would have been completely turned off by Chan-wook Park.
Wow.
Old Boy is of the trilogy, original trilogy, the only one that I actually find tolerable to watch.
Old Boy is the only one I vividly remember. I don't remember the other two that well because I saw them a while ago.
All right, so staying with my foreign theme is a foreign director, Kim Ji-woon, who directed a movie earlier this year starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, The Last Stand.
Oh, I wanted to see that.
And this movie is a lot of fun. This is old school B-action, like 80s action movie to the tilt.
That's what I was hoping for.
And that's exactly what it is. You don't take it seriously. There's stuff in this movie that if you're like, what? You know, and it's reintroduced later, and you're like, what? You know? It's completely ridiculous and off the wall, but it's directed very well. Arnold Schwarzenegger does a good job he does a much better job than the little bit that we saw him in Expendables 2. You know, he wasn't very, very, he didn't do a good job back then, but in this one, he really plays the role of an older sheriff very well, and, you know, he plays the you know, the grizzled veteran with a history, you know, and Guzman,
Luis Guzman
is in this. He plays as one of his deputies, and he's great. Johnny Knoxville is just bonkers in this. Forrest Whitaker didn't really need to be in this. And the bad guy is just some, you know, take him out of central casting bad guy, and you know, it doesn't even matter who he is, but the action
must be stopped.
Absolutely, the action is very well directed, and the ending is pretty good. So I would recommend this. This is a yay. That's the last of my foreign movies, but my last movie I'll talk about is from 1932. Directed by Todd Browning, called Freaks.
Gibble, gobble, gobble, one of us.
It's only an hour and 4 minutes long, and it's, you know, has this huge cult following and this reputation. And I think the reputation is pretty well earned. For something that's only an hour and 4 minutes, the first half drags on as this really strange melodrama of these circus freaks in this... you know, at the circus, you know, like during the off hours and the goings on and the relationships and all that kind of stuff. It's not until the second half that it gets kind of strange. Now, it's a very exploitative movie. It at times the camera just hovers on some of these people that you're just like, there's no reason to do this. It's kind of uncomfortable. You can tell that maybe, you know, a lot of these people who have probably mental disabilities as well just don't know what's going on. So it is uncomfortable at times, but it is interesting to look at it in the perspective of film history, you know. And I can understand why some people would be like, oh my god, this is the most terrifying thing, because there's some terrifying things at the end. Especially the ending of what happens to a certain character, you know. The acting is pretty terrible, because most of these people are non-actors. There's only maybe two or three actors that are in this. I mean, I can't recommend it to everybody, because I think it may disturb some people, but I mean, if what I've said sounds interesting at all, then go for it. So I would say mild yay. You've seen this, Wally, right?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on it?
I dig it. Like, it's one of those, like, weird things, like, you would never be able to get away with making this movie, like, these days. Like, absolutely, they would be, like, people would lose their minds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you want to invest, like, an hour of your time, yeah, it's not gonna...
If it was made nowadays, it would be a complete straight-out documentary.
Yeah, it'd be a straight-out documentary. I mean, the ending is pretty cool. I dig...
I watched the special features, and there was, there's, like, three different endings, and they're just edited in different ways and shortened to... significantly in one, just based on the sensors in the location of where it was shown, because this is pre-Hays Code, so it's not like they were working with much restrictions here.
Exactly. Let's do the demo, please.
Hermano?
All right, I got five movies to talk about. First one from 1974, Chinatown.
Oh! This is your list of shame movie, isn't it?
Yes, it was on my list of shame. First time watch. Starring Jack Nicholson, Faye Dunaway. Synopsis, a private detective hired to expose an adulterer finds himself caught up in a web of deceit, corruption, and murder.
Yep.
You've seen this.
I have.
Nice.
I was completely in on this movie. I loved the performances. I loved the whole mystery noir aspect to the movie. I was so in
until
the last couple minutes,
until the reveal
of the ending, like how the movie ends. It just lost me
there.
I really did not appreciate the way it ended. I just felt like it was a real letdown.
Was it the dialogue of the reveal, or was it the action at the end that turned
the action? I just felt like people just threw their hands up in the air and said, "Oh well, that's that." You know, like, I just didn't feel like there was a good, interesting ending. I shouldn't say it wasn't interesting. It was definitely interesting, because it was a weird... It went in a direction I did not predict.
Oh, no. See, I disagree, because I think it certainly works well with the themes of the film, you know? Because there's a lot of stuff of people just turning a blind eye throughout this whole movie.
Yes.
You know? And that's kind of exactly what happens at the end.
Yeah, sort of. But I mean, I just felt like by the end, I don't know. I guess I was maybe, and I just expected it to kind of all wrap up nice and neatly, and it didn't. It just kind of left it open ended, and I didn't expect that. And I don't know. I don't know why it turned me off. I can't even fully.
How long ago did you see it. This?
2 weeks ago.
Oh, so it's not something that's even simmered and you've let it grow.
I haven't even thought about it. I initially didn't like it, and I still to this day really don't like the ending. I liked everything else about the movie. I thought the performances were great. I thought that the mystery was actually really well done. I didn't guess where it was going. I mean, until Faye Dunaway at one point makes a reveal in this movie, I was like, what the hell? I was like, where the hell did that come from? And like, also from that point on, I was in. I was like, wow, where's this going? Because I felt like all of a sudden the movie just kind of became a different movie. Like, all of a sudden the stakes were instantly like, whoa. And
how about the nose slit? How they filmed that is just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, Roman Polanski. He's such a small dude. Like, I laughed at him. I was like, even if after he had cut my nose, I probably just would have laughed at him. Like, he's so cute. He's so cute and tiny. But I'm not going to say, man. I do think it's a pretty solid movie. I just wasn't a huge fan of the ending.
Oh, that's a shame.
Next, I watched a movie that I was highly anticipating, and I finally got to watch it. From Terrence Malick to The Wonder, starring Ben Affleck, Olga Kurylenko, Javier Bardem, and Rachel McAdams. Synopsis. After falling in love in Paris, Marina and Neil come to Oklahoma where problems arise. Their church's Spanish pastor struggles with his faith while Neil encounters a woman from his childhood. One thing you can always say about, you can always count on with Terrence Malick is the movies are going to look gorgeous. The cinematography is top notch. I love the way he directs just scenes, and his cinematographer is amazing. Just the way the camera floats and moves, and it's constantly like, it's almost like it's just flying through every scene. Like, it's just amazing the things he catches. I mean, you're going to get the usual stuff like sunsets and like ocean. Tide rising and stuff like that. Now, where this movie suffers a little bit is the story. The story is pretty solid, except that it's only told from Olga Kurylenko's character's perspective. Ben Affleck is literally walking through this entire movie. You never get his perspective of everything that's happening in the movie. You only get Olga Kurylenko's perspective. So I think it suffers because you don't get both sides of the story. You only see her having problems or something's off. And it always seems like something's off with Ben Affleck. Like, I think he has maybe, you hear his voice maybe twice in the entire movie. And he'll maybe say like a couple words and that's it.
Did he say, I'm Batman?
No, he does not. He does not predict that into The Wonder. But I think that's where the movie lost me a little bit, because it's trying to depict this relationship that starts off well and just kind of like how relationships go through the motions. You have your good times, you have your bad times.
You think that's... Now, you say it's detrimental, but I mean... I'm sorry. Malick was obviously going for that, maybe just that perspective, that point of view.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, because he doesn't give any dialogue to Ben Affleck.
What do you think would have made it work for you if it was still just from her point of view?
Because you don't, even through her point of view, you never quite understand what's going on with Ben Affleck. Why are they having issues? It's almost like he seems very distant. I don't know if that was the point, to not give him any dialogue or not give him any... just anything, really. He walks from room to room. He walks around. You see him work at his job. He comes back home. They sometimes have good days, sometimes they have bad, but you never understand why. Like, it's just, I guess he just wanted to depict a relationship on the rocks and the ups and downs of relationships, but not really go into it very deeply. So you're really only getting surface level stuff, like, oh, they're having a bad day, or oh, right now they're having a good day, obviously, because they're kissing and hugging and stuff. So everything else in the movie, like the Javier Bardem thing, is pretty much a priest that's struggling with his faith. He talks to the sky as like he's talking to God, and he's like why do you let things like this happen? He's constantly saying things like, why are things like this? Help me understand.
Is he verbalizing this, or
it's all narration? Oh, okay. It's all everything that most characters say is all overdubbed, like just narrated. So. Would I recommend this movie to Wally? Absolutely not. I would recommend it to Tim.
Really?
I think you might get something out of it.
Well, more so than The Tree of Life?
It's very similar to the Tree of Life. I think it even goes a little further than Tree of Life as far as not really being able to understand characters. Like, you can kind of understand where Brad Pitt is coming from in Tree of Life. You can understand where, I forget the female, Jessica Chastain's character is coming from. You can understand where the kids are coming from. In this movie, you just do not know what the hell is going on with Ben Affleck.
Is it worth 112 minutes of my time?
I'm mostly interested to see your take on the movie. I wouldn't put it at the top of your Netflix, if y'all put it that way. But I do recommend it. I think he's a great filmmaker. He's one of a kind. There's nobody else making movies like him, so I definitely say yay. I watched a not-so-good movie from 2011 called The Awakening. This is one of those Mia was in a very specific mood to watch a ghost story / haunted house movie, and there was really nothing on demand, so we went to Netflix, kind of did a quick search, and I came up with this movie, and I'd seen the box art or the cover art for this movie a bunch of times, and I'd always passed it by because it had kind of middling ratings, but we decided to give it a try. You know, it's from England. Basically, the synopsis: in 1921, England is overwhelmed by the loss and grief of World War I. Hoax exposer Florence Cathcart visits a boarding school to explain sightings of a child ghost. Everything she believes unravels as the missing begin to show themselves. It stars Rebecca Hall, who was recently in Iron Man 3, and Dominic West. And the movie wasn't that bad. It's definitely a BBC production. It looks like most other BBC films, where it looks like it's just a glorified TV show that is lengthened. The acting was mostly good. I mean, they had the teacher in Harry Potter movies that always wore pink and she loved cats, but she was really mean.
Oh yeah,
they had that actress. Yeah, had that actress. She played like a a caretaker for the school. You know, the acting's not bad. The story overall is pretty, you know, mediocre. Where the movie loses it is it's one of those movies where everything seemed pretty, it seemed like just average up until the end, where they try to really force in a lot of exposition and try to explain a lot of things and try to include all these other things that weren't set up in the movie beforehand. So in the last 15 minutes of this movie, all of a sudden all these mysteries become to unravel and new things are introduced, and you're like, where the hell is all this coming from? And it becomes very muddled and just kind of like they're like, you know what, they'd seen like dailies or something and said, this movie's not really that exciting, it's kind of just middling and average, let's add a bunch of stuff at the end and just like try to ramp it up or something. And it really kind of just went off the rails a little bit, not in a bad way, like, you know, Kill List, like it just kind of went off the rails you could just see it on screen, like they were trying too hard.
The director, Nick Murphy, you talk about, it looks like it has a glorified television look to it. That's all he's done is TV series on the UK.
Yeah. I mean, the ghost story wasn't that bad. The effects were, you know, TV level effects. I honestly don't think it was that bad until it got to the end. So for that, I'll give it a meh. And finally, I watched one of my most anticipated movies for this year, released last week, directed by Adam Wingard, You're Next, starring Sharni Vinson, Joe Swanberg, Ty West, a bunch of other people. Synopsis: when the Davidson family comes under attack during their wedding anniversary getaway, the gang of mysterious killers soon learns that one of the victims harbors a secret talent for fighting back. For people that haven't seen this movie, I'll preface this by saying this. If you go into this movie expecting a serious, straight-laced horror movie, you're not going to like it. Go into this movie knowing that it's an homage to old horror movies. All the way down to bad acting, the score is like maybe a horror movie score from the 70s. And dialogue is poorly, like the dialogue was poorly written. But it's absolutely done on purpose. You can just tell. If you go into those expectations, or just go in with that mindset, you will get a lot out of this movie, because I think this movie was freaking awesome. I thought it had really awesome creative kills. I thought the masked killers, which I think they're known as the animals because they all wear animal masks.
So there's more than one.
There is more than one. I don't want to spoil the synopsis where it says one person has a penchant for fighting back. It's pretty awesome how it's revealed. It's revealed very, like, subtly. Like, you just see someone all of a sudden start to take charge. Like, they kind of know what to do in the situation. And just, like, through the rest of the movie, it's kind of revealed, like... It reveals their backstory pretty much. And you kind of get to know, like, why they know how to defend themselves and why they're able to, you know, go toe-to-toe with these guys that are obviously, like, trained, like, killers. I don't want to say too much because there is kind of a twist to the movie. There's multiple twists, actually, and I thought it was really well done. It was really refreshing to see a movie that wasn't all about jump scares. Really, like I said, really creative kills. And it introduced me to a song that's constantly repeated in the movie. This band called the Dwight Tooley Band. And this song is... I've been playing this song, like I must have played it, like, 20 times the other day. And I have... an actual use for it in my next project. So if nothing else, it introduced me to that song. So I highly recommend it. I'm a Uchara fan, like I've said before. I think you guys would like it, but only if you approach it with the mindset that it's an homage to classic old school horror movies that didn't have much of a budget.
Would you recommend people go see it in the theaters, like, right now?
If you're a horror fan, absolutely. But once again, I cannot say it enough. Go into it knowing it was made as an homage. It's on purpose that the acting is bad. It's on purpose that I actually really enjoyed the score. I think it's a great like homage to, like, old horror movie scores where, like, it was really over the top.
Well, and, since, like, you're such a horror buff, you were able to see it pretty quickly that it was a homage.
I at first I was like, wow, the parents are really bad actors. Like, and then certain lines were just really delivered really flat, and I'm like, there's no way every single person in this movie could be a bad actor. The main person in the movie is actually really good, and I can see them coming out of this movie and being like someone that moves on and does bigger things, because I thought they were great. But once again, I really do think it was on purpose, because I'm like, wow, that dialogue was really bad. There's no way that someone thought that was good. But after a while, I'm like, all these pieces kind of come together to tell me that this is an homage to older horror movies.
Was your theater pretty packed?
It was not. I saw it on a Monday night, so I saw it this past Monday, so there was maybe 10 people in the theater.
I was going to ask you if you got any reaction or vibe from any of the other people in the theater.
People seemed to enjoy it. There was a group of, like, four girls, and they were doing the typical horror movie stuff, like, oh, don't go in there, don't do that, why would you do that? Like, they were kind of, like, speaking out, but I didn't mind. I really don't mind that stuff so much in horror movies, because I think it kind of comes with the territory, so I highly recommend it. I thought it was really good, so yay! That was it.
I'd like to take this time to mention that we have a YouTube page.
What's YouTube?
We have a bit of content right now, and we're adding as we go. We probably even have something... maybe connected to the show afterwards. So if you visit youtube.com/1sttimewatchers, you'll be able to see behind the show content, in show content, and some extras that each of us, I think, are going to share.
Yep. Now, how would I find YouTube?
By typing in youtube.com.
Where?
On the internet.
What the fuck is the internet?
Once again, that is youtube.com/1sttimewatchers. Just another way to enjoy the show.
Now, how do you spell YouTube? Is it the letter U and then T-U? B?
Yeah, or is it like all like T-O-O-B?
You really know how to kill the ending of a plug, don't you? Alright, this is episode 75, and every fifth episode we forgo trailer hitches for something that we like to call Movie Battle Royale. This is where we use flickchart.com to create our collective top 10 list of all time. We will be pitted with 5 pairings of movies and decide which one is better with each battle. Shall we get started?
Begin!
Alright, first up is Unbreakable versus Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Why am I being asked this question? Because, Unbreakable.
Yes, Unbreakable.
Yep.
Next up... A Bug's Life versus The Fifth Element.
Fifth Element.
Of course, The Fifth Element.
Fifth Element.
Now, what do you guys think about A Bug's Life?
It's not bad if you're a kid. Or if you have kids to watch it with.
That's true.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those... Is that a Pixar movie?
It is.
That one's much more directed towards kids than, like, Toy Story, where adults can enjoy it.
Right, I think it's one of their weaker ones, too. Not
one of their early ones as well.
Yeah.
Like, if not one of
this is from 98, ones. So it's... within their first 3 years. The fifth element it is. next up, Grease from 1978, or Me, Myself, and Irene. This is interesting.
I'm kind of indifferent on both of these. I'm going to let you guys decide.
No.
I don't like musicals.
Why don't you like musicals?
I don't like them.
Why not?
I think they're silly.
Why do you think they're silly?
Why would I have to sing my lines when I could easily say my lines?
But you don't like musicals.
Break into song and dance to get a point across. Break into song and dance to get a point across. No.
So does that make it Me, Myself, and Irene for you?
Yeah. But I also didn't really like Me, Myself, and Irene either.
But, I mean, which weighs more for you?
I'm going to have to go against my grin and go with Grease. I think Grease is a much... people are still watching it now. They're still talking about it now.
What about the ending, though? What lesson are you telling women or girls that if you dress like a slut, then you get the guy?
I don't have kids.
Jesus. Romano?
I'm with Wally. I'm not a huge fan of musicals. I don't outright hate them, but I don't like Grease. But I was kind of like indifferent on Me, Myself, and Irene, but I think I dislike Grease so much that I have to go with Me, Myself, and Irene.
You know, it's funny. I think I was going to go with Me, Myself, and Irene until you made that point, Wally, that people are still watching and still enjoying, and there may be even more influences with Grease.
You still see it. It still comes on regular TV. You know what I mean? Like, you see it all the time.
Yeah, Grease it is. All right, for our fourth pairing, we have 50 First Dates versus Clear and Present Danger. I'm definitely going to go with Clear and Present Danger.
I have to go with Clear and Present Danger, too, because 50 First Dates was just was silly.
Yeah, it's pretty silly, but I think Clear and Present Danger is a solid, solid thriller.
I dig it.
Harrison Ford is Jack Ryan.
How dare you, sir? I'm the President of the United States. How dare you, sir?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Romano?
Clear and Present Danger.
Jeez, you don't sound too excited.
I barely remember that movie. I've only seen it once, so it's hard for me to like.
Alright, finally. We have 12 Monkeys versus Back to the Future.
Oh my god.
Oh, this
is not tough for me at all. It's Back to the Future.
I do like the 12 Monkeys quite a bit.
Oh, no, be honest.
I'm going with 12 Monkeys.
Yeah?
I love the idea of...
You like that movie? You think it's a better movie than Back to the Future?
I think it's a better time travel movie than Back to the Future.
I've watched 12 Monkeys more than Back to the Future.
Well, that shouldn't matter as to... Sure, you may enjoy it more, but do you think it's a better movie than Back to the Future?
Yeah, because if I go by the amount of times like I'm enjoying the movie, what I get out of it. Back to the Future, I think that the only reason I'm turned off about Back to the Future is that all this faux 80s nostalgia that's still going on, and it's that... kind of rubs me sideways. Like, see hipsters who were born in like 1987 wearing Back to the Future t-shirts, like, you weren't even alive when this movie came out. Stop.
I was alive and I still enjoy it.
I want to take this time to mention that we have merchandise available to purchase now.
Merchandise!
Yes, you can get t-shirts and more if you visit Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. I think in the future you'll be able to purchase just about anything with our logo on it.
I got a maternity shirt coming up for you ladies.
Awesome. So please show your support for the show by visiting Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers and find an item that you'll be proud to wear.
Buy our stuff!
Yes. All right, let's get into our discussion of Mud.
Somebody's been in our boat. Shit. Let's go. We gotta go if you want to make it back. Takes twice as long going upriver.
Hold on. Up there, they stop.
Where the hell did he go?
I don't know.
The plot. Two young boys encounter a fugitive and form a pact to help him evade the bounty hunters on his trail and to reunite him with his true love. The director, Jeff Nichols. The actors, Matthew McConaughey, Ty Sheridan, and Jacob Laughlin. Hermano.
Yes, sir.
A couple of weeks ago, we reviewed Elysium, which was Neil Blomkamp's sophomore debut. Now, as much of a mixed bag we were on Elysium, we kind of recognize unique and original filmmaking, which we have seen with Jeff Nichols as well. And speaking of sophomore films, his second film, Take Shelter, is a film that I think all three of us enjoyed very much.
I need to have this movie in my collection.
Yeah. So do you think Jeff Nichols delivered again in his third outing?
Yes, Tim, I do. I liked this movie quite a bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in fact, I think maybe sacrilege to say this in front of Wally, but I think it may be his best film.
Ooh.
As no. much as I like to take shelter, I found myself really enjoying everything about this movie, like from the performances to the setting to just the themes that it explores, the themes about the main theme is kind of love and, like, I guess companionship, and just the way the movie goes with that, and just kind of how it doesn't sugarcoat anything and kind of tells the story in a very real way, really appealed to me, because I hate when movies start out a certain way and I'm like, yeah, and then all of a sudden it just kind of ends in a very, you know, happy, crowd-pleasing way. I don't feel like this movie really... It kind of did. I know Tim's giving me that look like, what are you talking about? Of course it did. I don't really think that it did. But I thought Matthew McConaughey was great. The kids were awesome. That one kid had a really great name. Neckbone. I just really enjoyed everything about it. I mean, even characters that I wasn't aware were in it. Sam Shepard. Is that his name? Sam Shepard? Yeah. Yeah, I thought he was great in a small role. Michael Shannon. I don't really know why he was in the movie.
Yeah, I know. Just do it a favor.
I feel like his character didn't really need to be in this movie. I felt like you could have cut out probably like 15 minutes.
But weren't you happy to see him?
I was happy to see him, but I felt like he didn't have much to do. He was just kind of like this quirky character in the movie. I would have liked him to have like a... I don't know what role he would have had to have written a completely different role for him, but I would have actually... You know what he really would have been good as is the protagonist in this movie. I think he really could have been a good bad guy in this movie, so I would have liked to see him.
You mean antagonist?
Oh, sorry, antagonist.
Yeah, one of the bounty hunters. I could have seen that easily.
The main bounty hunter guy. Oh yeah, absolutely. I really wish he was in that role, but even though he wasn't, I thought the movie was great.
Now, okay, I already have a beef with you in the fact that you say it's better, that it may be better than Take Shelter.
I said maybe.
Oh man, I don't know about that. I think Take Shelter is a phenomenal film, and this doesn't even. This, at points, comes a little close, but overall does not come close at all.
I think this movie's a lot smaller than Take Shelter. It's a much more bombastic performance.
No, it's not even about that. It's not even about that, because I think that the themes of this film are a lot more overt. This is a very Christian film. The Christian imagery in this is pretty overt, starting with the snakes. Dear God, the snakes. And that brings me to my biggest gripe of this film, and that's the editing. The editing in this film is not good. I'm going to say fair to not good, because there's times in here where I'm like, why do you keep cutting to this? You know, you keep cutting to shots of the sun going through the trees, you know, coming through the trees down on the faces of these people, and I'm like, when they're looking up, I'm like, I don't need that. You know, it's too on the nose. And how many times do they cut and reference those snakes that are in that pond?
I will agree, it does foreshadow those snakes quite a bit.
I was after the first time, I got it. You don't need to keep going back. I blame that on the editor. And this is a different editor than that wasn't Take Shelter. I had no problems. It didn't even stick out to me, the editing in Take Shelter. In this movie, it stuck out to me quite a few times. Especially, there's also another sequence where there's a montage of them picking up parts. The kids picking up parts. And there's one scene in that montage where they're climbing up an old 18-wheeler. The very next shot in that montage is them walking around the 18-wheeler as if they're walking up to go on top of that thing. It really stuck out to me. I'm like, what? Why? So, and then now I will say the performances. The kid, this Ty Sheridan kid who was in The Tree of Life, who also did a phenomenal job in The Tree of Life. This is a kid I want to see grow as an actor. He's had two very good directors. You know, if he can get more good directors in the future, then. But he's already off to a strong start. You know, a lot of people are praising Matthew McConaughey in this as, oh, he's like the best part of this movie. He's Oscar worthy. But to me, this is not Matthew McConaughey's movie. This is the kids' movie, because this is a movie from the point of view of the kids, and that's kind of what bugs me about the ending when we get into the spoilers. The epilogue, if you will, of this movie. Because it's not Matthew McConaughey's movie. It's these kids. It's the story of these kids and how they encounter Matthew McConaughey's character. Now, I mean, all the performances are great. The I love the story. I love the setting and you know how you really get a slice of life of how what it is like for life with these kids and where they're from and how this 14-year-old kid, you know, since his father and mother are getting a divorce, you know, it looks like they're going to have to leave this boathouse that they live on in the river where they is kind of the source of their living. Mm-hmm. And you really feel for this kid and how he just does not want to leave. You know, he doesn't want to go into town where his mother's going to be moving. So, I mean, from that standpoint, you know, it's a pretty good film. But otherwise, it's just some of the stuff in here that are much more overt. And as much as Take Shelter was I guess, a Christian-themed film as well, this one just seemed a lot more in your face, on the nose. Wally?
See, I saw this movie. This movie is not about the kids. It's not really about love. It's about growing up. It's about the choices you make from being a kid to being a man.
Coming of age movie.
Yeah, but it's the whole game. It's not just coming into that age. It's what the decisions you make after that age. So you have these kids, and you have Ty Sheridan, who's following almost the same path that Matthew McConaughey followed. You know, he's in love with this girl. He'd do anything for her. You know, when he first sees her, he comes in, you know, fists a flying, you know, takes out the guy who's harassing her. But then later on, you see him still fists a flying, the same way that Matthew McConaughey has that reveal about his relationship with Juniper. And the way the whole movie progresses, you see, like, what could have been Matthew McConaughey's character as a kid, then him now, you know, where he is now on the run, and then when we get into spoilers, there's the final part of that story, and you see like this kid basically just kind of he's growing up. He has to grow up. He has to find the girl of his dreams. That's in quotation marks, and then he has to have his heart broken. That's going to happen more than a couple of times over the course of time until you find the right person, you know what I mean? Like, you're gonna go through these growing pains, you know, and he's just starting. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey has been through his growing pains and has done, you know, this, that, and the other. And now he's in a position where, you know, where he's at, and, you know, then, forward from there, you know? This movie was incredibly refreshing to me. I know Marlon said it's probably better than Take Shelter. I think it's almost there. It's almost on the same level. I put almost on the same level as Take Shelter. Because, like, you have a character who's an anti-hero. You have Mud, who's a fugitive. And, you know,
see, when you say anti-hero, I get the sense that you interpret that as he's a main character. He's not a main character.
He's one of the main characters.
No, it's not... Because a main character...
He's the runner for Ty Sheridan. Ty Sheridan looks up to him.
Well, sure, but he's not a main character. He's a secondary character in this film. It is Ty Sheridan's movie.
I think you could argue it's both their stories. I mean, I don't think that Matthew McConaughey is so in the background that you could say that it's not partly his story. Like, we're also dealing with his story as well as the kid's story.
Only because you're following Ty Sheridan. That's it. Oh, Ellis is his name. Yeah. You're only following Ellis in his story is just because he comes across.
Well, his meeting with Mud is what sets off different events in the movie as well. Like, he gets a little more boastful and, like, you know, Matthew McConaughey, doesn't he at one point, like, give him, like, the nerve to go talk to this girl and stuff like that? Like, I feel like
it's... Sure, and that's part of the coming-of-age story that is this movie, which is fine, because, you know, I love the interaction between the two kids, the friends, you know, their dialogue between one another seems so natural and authentic, you know, especially at that age, you know, they're talking about girls not really knowing how to talk about them.
Yeah.
And how Ellis comes across this girl, you know, that he wants to be a girlfriend with, a boyfriend, you know, too, you know. And you know, you're like, well, you know, she's like 2 years older than you. You know, at that age, it's
like
immense.
It's a million years at that age.
Yeah. So everything about that felt authentic. So I mean, in that sense, I agree with you.
But I was refreshed by this movie because it didn't swerve me, and I appreciated that. You have an anti-hero like Mud, who's a fugitive. And the kids ask him, like, you know, what happened? Oh, I killed a guy. You know, I think a lesser written role or a lesser directed role would have had him, like, lie about what he did. And have a point of conflict later with this kid who's looking up to this guy find out the ugly truth that he actually killed somebody. Okay. But this guy just comes out and just throws all his cards on the table. He has no reason to lie.
Well, except for maybe the reasons of why... the overall story may be true, but all the other, you know, factors that went into that story and how it unfolded is, you know, who knows if he's telling the truth.
Yeah, but the thing is, there was never that sudden shock and reveal, like, you didn't knock over, you know, didn't, you know, rob a community, you killed somebody, I can't believe you killed, you know, and then a point of conflict come from there. That point of conflict never exists in this movie, and I loved that.
No, that's a good point.
I think you get the truth, too, from multiple angles. You get the truth as each character who's telling it sees it. Like, you get the truth as Matthew McConaughey sees it. Then Sam Shepard tells a different version of the truth. And then also Reese Witherspoon's character tells her side of the truth, like how she sees it. So you get many different viewpoints of like what the truth exactly is, and you'll have to decide for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie had me from the very beginning. I was like watching it, I was like, I'm in. Yeah. Like I thought some of the camera angles, like the trees, I was like, this almost feels like filler to me. It doesn't feel like...
Right.
I think a lot of it was establishing shots. I don't think it was just there for no reason, because it usually just led to, hey, there.
No, it was there throughout kind of the film.
I thought what was more problematic is they kept constantly showing the kids go back and forth in that boat. I was like, man, how many times we get it? They use the boat to get to this place. You don't have to keep showing me them come over in the boat. Like,
yeah.
I think they could have cut that out. All the other stuff was just establishing stuff. Or, like, I mean, Terrence Malick does it all the time, so I would never fault stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's such a different filmmaker anyways, you know? Is there anything else before we get into spoilers?
No, because what I want to say next about the movie falls into the spoiler category.
All right, then.
This movie was probably 10 minutes too long for me. I wish they left it ambiguous. I was hoping for the ambiguous ending. That you don't know what happened to Mud. He took a bullet. You see him get hit.
Yep.
But you don't know if he's dead. And then Michael Shannon later sees the shirt in the water, but no body attached.
Well, no, there was
to
a body.
No,
attached.
There was a body. It was floating.
It was floating.
Yeah,
I didn't see that. I was watching on a fairly smaller screen. But you see, like, it would have been great to have that just that you don't know, like,
agreed.
Factor.
Agreed. Like, you know, because that's, like I said, this is Ellis's story, and when the epilogue is Matthew McConaughey Mud with his father leaving on the boat, I'm like, well, this completely goes against the grain of what this story is about.
Yeah, I thought it was unnecessary.
Absolutely.
Like, you should have stopped it with the kids talking about, like, oh, do you think Mud's alive? I don't know.
That would have been perfect.
And then
ending.
Just a painting shot of the water.
Sure.
The river, you know, the last establishing shot, you know, leaving the, you know, maybe, like, put the camera on the boat and, like, drive away from, you know, the island to let it fade out in the background, because they're not going to go back there anymore.
I don't completely agree, though. I do sort of agree. Like, I don't know that I completely agree that it should have been left ambiguous. I didn't have a problem with the ending the way it stood. I think the part with the kid moving into the complex, like, that was unnecessary. Like, I didn't really feel like you needed to show him there. Like, the whole Matthew McConaughey thing, I think you could have cut it right there with the whole Sam Shepard bit. The only thing I didn't really care for is that I felt like it was kind of tropey to have a character who is kind of like a lone wolf, and he's approached for help early in the movie, and he's like, no, you can leave me out of it, you know, you've gotten into trouble one too many times. And then by the end of the movie, he's like, oh, never mind, I'll actually help you out.
Yeah, because they mentioned it somewhere through the movie that he's an assassin.
Yeah.
Or maybe that alludes that he was an assassin back in the war,
yeah.
You know, in Vietnam War or something like that.
Yeah, that's Mud's perception of him growing up. Like, he was brought, he's essentially adopted by this guy who was a sniper in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a kid, and you find out, like, the guy who's raising you is a sniper.
Yeah.
Whose sole purpose is to kill people. Like, he's an assassin. Dude.
Yeah, you make up your version of the truth. So Matthew McConaughey is telling it the way he sees it, then Sam Shepard tells the kid a different way. Like,
yeah, he's like, oh, I was just a sniper. I don't know how many people, like, I killed. But.
Yeah. He doesn't make a big deal about it, where, you know, Matthew McConaughey is much more boastful about, like, what his accomplishments are.
Yeah, but that turn is, like, you realize that Sam Shepard's character looks at Matthew McConaughey, like, I have to, you would help your kid. Like, even, like, it goes against your grain. You're like, he's gotten himself so many trouble. He's on his own this time.
But it's
his
funny.
His heart turns, like, he is kind of like my, like the son I didn't, I lost my wife and my kid,
yeah.
and I've adopted him, like, that's my, yeah. for all his work, he's my son now. Mm-hmm. I have to help
now, him. Now, what about these bounty hunters that are going after Mud, and they track him to this house, to
reckless, abandoned bounty hunter.
What the hell's going on? They have no regard for the people that live in this boat, in this house?
Nope.
Why not? Why would they not have any, at least yell out, come out, you know, like, well, they have him cornered, essentially.
The guy's established as a I don't give a shit dude. I mean, he has no problem hitting this kid, he's beating on women, like, he's not going to care about who's in the house.
I guess.
He just wants his vengeance, that's all he cares about.
Even then, like, that gunfight was just...
I love that gunfight.
I love the gunfight, but it was just really surprising that people just shoot into a house not knowing what's in there.
Yeah, but also... You know, Sam Shepard is across the river,
he's
and
he's picking him off people with that rifle.
But dude, he comes so out of nowhere. You know, it's like he expected it because you see he's fully dressed. He's not even like, oh, I hear this ruckus while I'm sleeping. He's not in his sleeping garb with the rifle. You know,
it doesn't really show like how. I mean, obviously he must have been alerted to a gunfight. He lives right across the river, so. He must have had that rifle at the ready because he looks like he's just ready to go with it. But
you see him practicing with the air rifle earlier, pecking off snakes. In the water. Yeah, so he's on his back deck, you know what I mean?
I think he's just getting ready for the zombie attack.
He's on his back deck having a nice night, and he's like, oh shit, there's movement, and it's coming toward the house.
Yeah. I honestly thought you guys were going to like this movie at least as much as I did, if not more. Like, I thought it was a great coming-of-age story. I love movies like this. Like, I mean, look, I thought it really reminded me, I got little hints of, like, Stand By Me, like, just that coming-of-age story aspect to it. Which is like the kid side of the story. Then you have Matthew McConaughey, and he has his whole plight with trying to get back to the girl he loves, and the whole like ups and downs of being in love, and you get like the family aspect where, you know, the marriage is falling apart, and the kid's just kind of learning about the harsh reality about like love and relationships, that no matter how much you love someone, sometimes it love's not enough. Like you separate because you have different ideas of what different directions you want to go in. Like the dad wants to stay and maintain his way of life, and the wife wants to move into town, and she's won something different.
I agree with everything that you're saying. It's just that the structure and this movie is not as tight as the only other Jeff Nichols film I've seen, and that, you know, Take Shelter.
Yeah.
It's just not as tight of a film. It's a little bit more looser. It's not as well structured. It's a finely structured film. It's just not as, you know, maybe I was expecting too much after Take Shelter. Maybe it was my expectations. I mean, I try not to let expectations get in the way of me analyzing a film, but I think ultimately it's just a slight step down, you know, and it's like I would still recommend this, people. Obviously, you know, on Facebook, about every week I do a recommendation of the week.
Recommended movie of the week.
And I recommend this movie because I know a lot of other people would enjoy it. It's a very accessible film.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would feel touched.
It's by a very relatable film. Yes. I mean, everyone's gone. I mean, not maybe the mud story, but the kid story. I mean, a lot of people can relate to that, and just, you know, being young and your first relationship and having misconceptions of. You know, like one person thinks they're in, like, you know, I think his relationship with the girl really parallels the relationship with the parents, where, like, you know, they have different ideas of what they want in the relationship. Like, the kid is really in, the girl is kind of like thought it was just one date, and you know what I mean? Like, I loved all that stuff. Like, it was really relatable.
Yeah, it's just that the epilogue to this movie took the movie a step down for me.
Yeah. I wish they left it ambiguous. I think I would be raving more about this movie if it was more...
I didn't mind it because I did like Matthew McConaughey's character so much. I think I wanted to know whether or not he survived. Like, if they left it ambiguous, I think I would have felt the same way I did about Chinatown.
That's an interesting point. We asked Twitter for their reaction.
What did our Twitter friends say?
We got several responses. Rodney Stone, loyal listener, at Hyro B. Movie was very good. If I had to nitpick, would have liked resolution for Juniper. People keep talking about McConaughey's comeback, but he isn't doing much different except choosing better projects. Aaron Tarantino, at Aaron Candy, I thought McConaughey did a really great job in it. Glad he has been choosing such good projects lately, but I thought it was a little too slow paced for my liking. Dragged in a couple of parts, but I liked the ending. Marcelo J. Pico, at Framed Panda, Mud Review, it was good.
That's it.
Space Lion, at Space Lion CS, One of our favorite films of the year. Great acting, steady and confident directing from Nichols. Fantastic atmosphere. Great adventure following the boys around, and the shootout was fantastic. Now the atmosphere, I agree. You know, the setting. You know.
Oh yeah, you get a really good sense of what life on a daily basis is like out there.
Yeah. Andrew Zachariasen at Andy Zach, a heavy hitting coming of age film that gets far deeper than most in the genre. McConaughey is Oscar worthy. Also, my number two of the film of the year so far. Richard Syed, at Cinephile Mag, if Mud was made in the 70s, it would be considered a fucking classic now. Up there with Chinatown, Godfather, et al. So, I responded by saying, that's pretty high praise. How do you put that in context with today's films? He responded, I don't think it's as good as Chinatown and Godfather, but I feel it's in the spirit of those 70s classics. Honestly, I think how you rate it to today's films depends on what you value. If it's emotional honesty and intelligent adult drama, then it's one, then this one has it in spades. That's good points. Grades? Hermano?
I think Jeff Nichols has progressively gotten better. I liked Shotgun Stories. Really liked Take Shelter. Loved this one.
So you actually would put this above Take Shelter? Or is that how
Very slightly. I'm not saying it's far leaps above beyond Take Shelter. I'm saying that I enjoyed this just a little bit better than Take Shelter.
Do you think that, depending on your mood of the day, that it may change?
Oh, it can absolutely change. I mean, I was so into this movie. Like, I haven't seen Take Shelter in a year. When I watched Take Shelter last year, a year after it came out, I said it probably would have been my number one movie of the year, or very close to it. I still think Take Shelter is a really, really good movie. I just think it's obviously two very different movies. One's dealing with one thing, one's dealing with something else. Like, Take Shelter is a very in-your-face performance from Michael Shannon. You get a great performance from Jessica Chastain. I love that whole family dynamic with him and his, you know, psychological problems. But I really loved this kind of small-town, simple story. I was just really in the mood for it, and I loved it. I gave it an A-.
I'm with Armando on this one. I gave Take Shelter an A+ when I saw it, because I adore that movie, and it would have been my number one had I seen it when it came out. This, I think, because of the ending that I thought was unnecessary, drops it down to an A-.
And I give it a B+, so that's an A- average still. Worthy movie, I think all of us would recommend.
Yep, I will own it on Blu-ray.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
And you can talk to us at Twitter at 1sttimewatchers.twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be discussing the 2007 Ryan Gosling film, Lars and the Real Girl.
That is the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch.
Lion face, lemon face, lion face, lemon face. I don't know what that is.
Is that Madagascar?
No.
Tim's never seen it. James and Bob Strike Back.
I've never seen Between parts of it.
Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. Lemon face, roo, lion face, rawr. Lemon face, roo, lion face, rawr.
I think they did a something of that. Like there was a take on that on in Madagascar. Like when Ben Stiller the lion is training or something like that. He's doing something like that.
That's weird, because that was completely improvised in the movie. They just started doing that out of the blue.
I think they describe it as an old actor's technique to get your face ready for, like, acting, I guess.
Oh, yeah.